So we are now ready to start with our meeting. After a long period not meeting as a portfolio committee, at least today we are meeting. We are going to look at the amendments from the NCOP. We had actually scheduled a meeting for the 7th of June, but because of members not attending the extended EPCs, we got a circular from the chair of committees that no committees must sit unless committees that are dealing with the legislation. Hence, today we are meeting. We got a permission that we could continue because we are dealing with the legislation. But I'm sure after next week, we will be meeting. Or after today, next? Yeah, we will be meeting as we used to. Meeting on Tuesday, 9:30. We are sorry that we started late. We had to wait for other members so that we have a bit of a quorum. And we are going to deal with the amendments from the NCOP, amendments on the refugees as well as the immigration bill. Amendments on the immigration are actually sort of a technical nature. I don't think we will waste time on that one. Even the refugee one, I don't think that should be of a problem to us. But they'll afford the time to the department for them to take us through the amendments. I think we should first start with the immigration because it's the simpler one. It's of technical nature. I'm not sure John Advocate Rasmus is going to be leading that process. Mr. McKay, you wanted to say something, and I'm sorry, to welcome the department as well. And the state law advisor. I am not sure if the parliamentary advisor is here. We don't have the parliamentary advisor today. I think we should note it because the one who usually attended is working now with the chair of committees or the speaker's office, something like that. So we don't have the parliamentary advisor at the moment. We do. Oh, I'm told that we have, but maybe he or she still lost somewhere. He or she will join us. Can we afford the time, the opportunity to Mr. McKay to introduce the delegation, though we know that, but let us afford you the opportunity to do that, Mr. McKay.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Honourable Chairperson, I will ask Advocate Erasmus to deal with the amendments to the immigration bill, and Advocate Sibylla Matcher will deal with the amendments to the refugee bill. And we will start off as recommended by the Chair with Advocate Erasmus. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honourable Members, as the Chairperson has indicated, most of the amendments are of a technical nature in terms of the Immigration Amendment Bill. If I can start off, if I may, just guidance from the Chair, take the bill itself and go line by the line in which the amendments occur, just to make it clear where the amendments are going to be effective. That's fine. Thanks, Chair. The first amendment relates to Clause 2 on page 3. If we look at line 55, just the word definition, it's spelled definition and not definition. D-I, it should be D-E-F. So we're just substituting the wording there. Then we're moving to page 4, still on clause 2, in line...
You told it, Advocate. Members are still going through their papers. Can we start from the beginning, please?
Apologies, Chairperson. If you look on page 3 of the bill, in line 55, the lines are marked on the right-hand side. Line 55, the word definition has been spelled incorrectly there. So it should just be definition, not definition. And then if we turn to page 4, if I may, in line 10, we're saying that the word the that's appearing before purposes should be deleted, because if you read it, it says sojourn in the Republic for the purposes of. It's for purposes of, not for the purposes of. So we're just deleting the word the before purposes in line 10. In line 11, we're just deleting the word a, because if you read it from the word preceding paragraph a, it should read visa means the authority to temporarily sojourn in the Republic for purposes of transit through the Republic, not a transit through the Republic. So we're just removing the letter A there. On page 4, again in line 19, after the word Republic, deals with subparagraph F. After the word Republic, we're just deleting the comma there. So working as a crew member of a conveyance in the Republic is contemplated in section 16, so that it flows. If I may move to clause 3, Chairperson. Clause 3, which is still on page 4, in line 36, just after the word state, that's in subparagraph 2, or organ of state, just to delete the comma after state. So it would read, from any department or organ of state whom the minister considers relevant. So that Jesus won. Turning to clause 4, still on page 4 as well, in line 55. What we're saying there is to omit the before that word permits. So right immediately after paragraph E, the should be changed to a. So a port of entry visa, not the port of entry visa. That's what it would read then. And further on, also in line 55, before the word visas, which is in the middle of that line 55 more or less, just to delete the word the. So if you read a port of entry visa, comma, visas, comma. You're just taking out the there. Then still on page 4, in line 57, before port of entry visa, we're just inserting the word a, because it's a port of entry visa. And then on page 4, in line 59, after port of entry visa, we're just inserting the words, comma, visas, comma, permanent residence permits. Because if one reads the section in the lines before that, it says port of entry visa, visas, permanent residence permits, and certificates. So we just, those words didn't find their way into the amendments. Then if we turn to page 5, in line 2, once again, before port of entry visa, just to insert the word A port of entry visa. In line 6 of the same page, after the word permits, we're just inserting the words A port of entry visa, because that's been omitted there. On page 5, in line 14, once again, just before port of entry visa, to insert the word A port of entry visa. Still on page 5, if one turns to line 28, before port of entry, once again to insert A, so it reads A port of entry visa. And then on page 5 and line 28 still, after port of entry, you'll see there's a comma. It shouldn't be there, because it says A port of entry, comma, visa. It should be port of entry visa. So we're just deleting the comma there. Chairperson, if I may, on the list itself, just if you look under clause 4, number 6, the O of honour is missing, but that's on the list itself. It just says in page 5. That's on the list itself that was tabled before that I'm reading. It doesn't say on, it just says in page. It's just a printing error. It's not a material. I just wanted to highlight it. It's just missing a capital O. Chair, if I may move on to Clause 7, which appears on page 6 of the bill. If we can move to line 24, just to say before the word A, to insert a comma. So what it would read then, it deals with the substitution of subsection 2 of the following. So subject to this act, comma, upon application in person and in the prescribed manner, comma, a foreigner may be issued. Because the bold obviously comes out. I'm just reading it as it would read once it's amended. Still on page 6 in line 25, after the word for, to omit, obviously to delete that word the, for the purposes of, so it's for purposes of, we're just deleting the, bringing it in line with the earlier amendment that we also effected. And once again, it's just bringing it in line with the earlier amendment on page 6, line 26, we're just omitting the A before transit through. So it's for purposes of transit through, not a transit through the Republic. Turning to Clause 8, Chairperson, on page 7 of the bill, in line 7, once again, just for purposes of alignment, we are omitting the word the that appears after the word for in line 7. So it would read, a valid visa for purposes of, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The next amendments proposed by the NCOP was in Clause 11. And that appears on page 8 of the bill. In line 15, after the words invested in, which appears more or less in the middle of that paragraph, just to insert a comma. So it would read as follows, subject to subsection 1A, comma, a business visa may be issued by the Director General to a foreigner intending to establish or invest in, comma, or who has established or invested in, comma, a business in the Republic. And then in line 25, on page 8 as well, after the word employ, to delete the comma. So employ, it says comma, it says employ, comma, the prescribed percentage of... So we're taking out the comma. We say employ the prescribed percentage or number of citizens or permanent residents. That brings me to the next amendment as well, in line 26. The comma appearing after the word residence and the comma appearing after the word month in line 26 are also deleted. So that subparagraph 2 will read, employ the prescribed percentage of or number of citizens or permanent residents within a period of 12 months from the date of issue of the visa. Chair, if I may turn to Clause 13, the next amendments were proposed. That appears on page 9 of the bill, and we will be working from line 36. Now, in line 36 and 37, we are deleting words in consultation with the prescribed departments. It would read then as follows, the Director General shall determine the maximum number of foreigners to be employed in terms of a corporate visa by a corporate applicant after having considered, and then it's been set up what needs to be considered, the requirements. On page 9, also in line 42, that was just an omission as well, we still got the word permit appearing there, both in lines 42 and 43, you'll see it refers to a corporate permit. It should be visa. Permit has been amended to indicate, so it should be, a foreigner employed in terms of a corporate visa shall work for the holder of that corporate visa. Turning to Clause 17, that's where the next amendments were proposed, Chairperson, members. If one goes to line 26 on page 10 of the bill, that paragraph B, it says, by the substitution for paragraphs A to B, it should be A and B. A to B, they follow on each other, so it's paragraphs A and B. If we move to clause 20, which appears on page 11 of the board. And we move to line 33. We're just after the word declaration to basically delete the comma. So it will read, the following foreigners may be declared undesirable by the Director General, comma, as prescribed, comma, and after such declaration do not qualify for a port of entry visa, comma, visa, comma, admission into the Republic or permanent residence permit. Turning to clause 21, still on page 11, in line 52, after the word Republic, just to insert a comma, so that we're departing from or in transit through the Republic, comma, shall comply with it. The next amendment is on page 12 in line 2, still on clause 21. In line 2, once again, after the word Republic, just to insert a comma before the word shall, so to read, the owner or person in charge of a conveyance entering into, comma, departing from, or in transit through the Republic, comma, shall within the prescribed period prior to boarding, etc., and the rest remains the same. The same goes for line 11. On page 12, in line 11, after the word Republic, we're just inserting a comma between Republic and shall. In clause 24, for the next amendments proposed by the NCFP, that appears on page 13, honourable members, and we can turn to line 49 on page 13. After the word act, so it's violation of this act, comma, just to insert a comma, shall be guilty of an offence. And then in line 50, it's just a drafting style and format. After we're not exceeding 1 year, you should actually have a colon and a capital provided. So what it would read like, it will be exceeding 1 year, colon, provided, the P of provided will be a capital letter. Capital P, provide that such person second conviction of such an offence shall be punishable and the rest stays the same. Turning to page 14, honourable members, in line 22, what we'll be doing there is to, after the word years, in line 22, to insert the words without the option of a fine. This was something that was also omitted, it would seem, because if you go further down, everywhere where we have deleted the words a fine or two, it was followed without the option of a fine, because, I mean, it should be that way. If you're taking away a fine, you don't have no option of the fine. So it's just for consistency. On page 14 still, in line 25, after the word duties, to once again include a comma. So to read, to breach such officer's duties, comma, shall be guilty of an offence and liable upon conviction. Still on page 14 in line 32, after the word officer, to also include a comma. So once again, just bring it in line with the rest, where we say that any person who pretends to be, comma, or impersonate, comma, an immigration officer, shall be guilty of an offence. If we move to clause 26, those are the next amendments, Chairperson. That appears on page 15 of the bill, in line 44. So on page in line 42, omit the word no and to substitute with the word and. So that subparagraph 2, 26A2, would read, there is an amendment effected by any of the sections of this Act, comma, excluding the section. Not there is no amendment effected. And then on page 15, in line 51, just to omit the words terms and conditions, or terms or conditions, were all in inverted commas, and what we want to do there is to say, inverted comma, terms and conditions, close inverted commas, the word or, and then inverted commas again, terms or conditions, close inverted commas. And those were the amendments that were proposed by the Select Committee Chair. Thank you very much.
Cape Erasmus. Honourable members, those were the amendments from the NCOP. I'm not sure if maybe the department still wants to add, maybe PSC, or you're fine. Okay. Members, those were amendments from the NCOP. Honourable Lovemore.
Thank you, Chair. I have just three questions, and the first is, excuse me, unless these are technical, obviously, just punctuation, etc. But with respect to corporate permits, Clause 13, can we have an explanation as to why the words "in consultation with the prescribed departments" have been removed? Seems to be a trend somehow that the minister doesn't necessarily have to consult, and it I know that there are certain conditions or certain considerations that are laid down that the minister has to look at for the issuing of corporate permits, but we do feel very strongly that the Department of Home Affairs is undertaking, we're taking upon itself a mandate which is not its. It is the Department of Home Affairs' mandate to facilitate immigration, not to decide how many foreigners, for instance, should come in on you know, a corporate permit or a business visa or whatever it might be. So why "in consultation with" has been removed? Secondly, Chair, whether any, and this isn't specifically to do with the amendments, but it's to do with the process, whether any further investigation has been made as to the constitutionality of this particular bill, specifically in terms of its heavy, heavy reliance, and thinking particularly of S versus Dar with the Constitutional Court case and ruling, heavy reliance on regulations, so that that was what was called the blank check ruling, where Parliament is giving a blank check to the Department. And also then whether there has been any regulatory impact assessment done. Something that comes to mind immediately and that was mentioned this morning just in terms of punctuation corrections was the requirement of domestic transit boarding conveyance lists that have to be submitted to the Department of Home Affairs. Department of Home Affairs is perfectly well aware that the transport industry is up in arms about this. It is going to have an impact on them. Has any kind of regulatory impact assessment done, or will it be done? Thank you, Chair.
Before Honourable Marcella comes in, Honourable Members, we are dealing with amendments from the NCOP, Honourable Lovemore. We are not opening this for any debate. We are just confining ourselves to the amendments from the NCOP. And we are not going to open up for a debate on this. No, we are not going to open.
Sorry, Chair, it's just questions we need an answer. This is part of our job as legislators, surely. It's just questions and answer. We don't have to debate.
I fully know that you need that, but we have debated these issues extensively, and we are not going to open it up for discussion. We are going to deal with amendments from the NCOP. That is all what we are here about. Honourable Marcella.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine was also on the amendments on clause 13, line 36, as amended by the NCOP. I wouldn't like to dwell much, but suffice to say though that if you are going to have a situation where the Department of Home Affairs will take it upon itself the monopoly of knowledge and the whole technical and skills acumen to determine on the best rather qualification of one of other departments, which I do think that the trading industry is more qualified to deal with such matters. And obviously any relevant department as the
current bill stipulates. So I think that one was, there was an oversight, with all due respect to those who sat and discussed and agreed to amend that. I don't think they've given enough thought on their suggested amendment. One of the things that they should take into account is, why is it that we've considered to keep this? Remember, there was a very serious debate on this particular clause. It was not simply a matter of this clause being, you know, being considered and left in abeyance by the portfolio committee. We dealt with this and carefully thought of. So I would like to really echo my colleague Honorable Lavmo in saying that this should in fact remain as it is currently. All of the technical amendments, your commas, your removal of some of the technicalities, I don't think there is really a challenge there. Those are simply cosmetic changes, but this one is very much a huge change, and it does put a serious impact in this current bill, as was dealt with by the committee. Jefferson, thank you.
Honorable Gump, did you raise your hand? Over to the department on this one issue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If I may take the members to clause 13, which deals with section 21. If you look at the insertion, there was an insertion of a new subsection 1, capital A, which deals with the consultation process. Section 1A reads, no corporate visa may be issued or renewed in respect of any business undertaking which is listed as undesirable by the minister from time to time in the Gazette after consultation with the minister responsible for trade and industry. If one goes down to paragraph C, where subsection 2 is being substituted, that deals just with the number of people that are being employed. And we don't see the argument was that there's no need to go and have consultation, see what the maximum number of people is that you need to employ. The consultation process takes place when the visa is issued. Who does it get issued to, etc., not the number of people that gets employed.
Honorable Lavmo.
Chair, I would certainly differ on that. If a company that has a corporate, that gets issued a corporate permit and is then allowed to bring in foreigners on corporate, they're going to be called permits, visas, on corporate visas, and the company says, just for example, that we need to bring in 50 foreigners on this corporate visa, is it the Department of Home Affairs Director General, is it for him to say, no, you don't need 50, we have the skills in South Africa that are sufficient to cover whatever you are going to do, you only need 20 and you can employ South Africans for the rest? The Minister or the Director General of Home Affairs does not have that knowledge and cannot purport to have that knowledge. It is the Department of Trade and Industry that should have that knowledge. So I would argue completely differently and say that that consultation there is absolutely necessary. Thank you, Chair.
Sir President, I have to add, I think in responding to Advocate Erasmus, yes, the two issues that he's talking about are two different separate issues. So we're not arguing whether or not the permit is granted in consultation with who. Now, this is the number, and we're dealing with this particular matter of ngobani abantu abazanabo nabazosebenza in South Africa. Who are those people that are going to admit in South Africa? How many? So the number of employees that should be employed by a company, I think we all agreed when we discussed the matter in the portfolio committee and also in the House dealing with this matter as Parliament, that we should in fact recognize that Labour, for instance, has got a mandate. Now, we don't want to stand here and claim to be all, to be a full house having all these skills requisite within a particular department, because we do not. And in fact, this will put the officials' responsibility beyond their call. It's cumbersome for those people that will be sitting in those offices, in the front offices, dealing with this on a day-to-day basis. And I'm happy, Chairperson and honorable members, because we have in our meeting now. Mr. McKay. Yesterday, Mr. McKay dealt with the issue of attracting skills, about 50,000 people per annum. And some people were saying, the very senior economists were saying, well, this might be good, but again, the number seems very low. Now you can imagine, who can determine that? It's not us. Trade and industry is busy engaging SADC and everybody else about trying to increase our domestic activities in the region with all others, trying to integrate the whole issue of economic activity, enhancing trade, and ensuring that we harness the space of trade in the region. But we can never determine those on our own. It's not Home Affairs, Chairperson, that is engaging the SADC, the region as a whole. It's not Home Affairs, it's the trade and industry. I think this is the matter that really we should not be taking lightly, but afford the department to really apply their mind, because they are here to advise us, Chairperson. And it's important that as politicians, we take a sit back a bit and allow them to think about this carefully. Because I don't think this was well thought of in the NCOP. They should have really thought about the reasons why this existed in the first place. Otherwise, we are going to end up limiting our impact and limiting the scope of growth, especially in those sectors that are much more sought after in growing our economy. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Gum.
Yes, Jay, I want to ask a question to the department, and that is this amendment in the NCOP. Where did it come from? Did the department suggest it? That's the first thing I want to know, because this is clearly the only substantive amendment. And if you also look at the how it read initially, it said after consultation with the Departments of Labor and Trade and Industry. Now then the department came to us, if I remember correctly, and said to us, no, we amend this thing to now read the DG shall, in consultation with the prescribed departments, determine blah, 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 blah. That is the department, that was the department's suggestion to take out that first part after consultation with labor and trade and industry and to include them in consultation with the prescribed departments. Am I correct as far as that is concerned as well? So two questions, basically. The first is, was it the department that suggested to the NCOP that we take out in consultation with? Second thing is, am I correct that it was the department who in the first place suggested to this committee that we need to amend it to read as it read when it left the National Assembly?
But also, the DG, how is the DG going to know what skills do we need in the country if there is no consultation? Can we be clarified on that?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, the section that was read by, maybe I should ask, start with Honorable Gaung's question first. Indeed, it was the department that had asked for this amendment, because it was seen as being we were emphasizing or an overemphasis on the consultation issue. One is, no corporate permit can be issued without consultation with the department or the minister responsible for the Department of Trade and Industry. That is quite clear. And when you talk about a corporate permit, it is much more than just a consultation on whether a permit can be issued or not. There's consultation on the number of persons that can be recruited by the holder of the corporate permit. So the whole issue of the numbers that you need to recruit is also included in that discussion with the Department of Trade and Industry. So we felt that where we are saying in this section, where in consultation with, we've already dealt with the in consultation in the previous subsection that deals with the corporate permit, subsection 1A that deals with the corporate permit. So there is no the law does not allow for the department to unilaterally decide on the issuance of a corporate permit. It is done in consultation with the minister responsible for trade and industry. Yes. There's just an addition, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Going to the Act itself, in the very same clause that there's an amendment, there are paragraphs that follow the particular amendment. I'll read it firstly, then explain. It will start with the amendment saying the Director General is in subsection 2. I'll be reading the amendment and reading the paragraphs that follow within the particular amendment, because they are not reflected in the bill. Perhaps there will be more clarity in terms of... Firstly, the subsection 2 will read as it appears in the bill with the proposed amendment by the NCOP. Then it will be reading like this. The Director General shall determine the maximum number of foreigners to be employed in terms of a corporate visa by a corporate applicant after having considered. Then the list starts A, the undertaking by the corporate applicant that it will, Roman figure 1, take prescribed measures to ensure that any foreigner employed in terms of the corporate visa will at all times comply with the provisions of this Act and the corporate visa. And Roman figure 2, immediately notify the Director General if it has reason to believe that such foreigner is no longer in compliance with subparagraph 1. Then paragraph B, it says the financial guarantees posted in the prescribed amount and form by the corporate applicant to defray deportation and other costs should the corporate visa let me just repeat, should the corporate it's printed in another version, sorry. It will read the financial guarantees posted in the prescribed amount and form by the corporate applicant to defray the deportation and other costs should the corporate permit be, and it says, withdrawn, or certain foreigners fail to leave the Republic when no longer subject to the corporate visa. Then the C, which is the most relevant one, say, corroborated representations made by the corporate applicant in respect of the need to employ foreigners, their job descriptions, the number of citizens or permanent residents employed, and their positions and other prescribed matters. So in this paragraph C, the applicant will already have said, I want so much number of people, these are the people that I have as citizens, just to justify the numbers and why they need to employ particular foreigners. So when we do consultations, which also appears in subsection 4, the DTI and labor will be involved in the process. The applicant will come forward saying, I need so many people. These are the justifications. When the consultation happens, it happens on the entire application. As DDG indicated, it was just an overemphasis on the number, which already would have been dealt with in the first instance. So subsection 4 also talks about the consultation with the DTI, Minerals and Energy and Agriculture, in respect of the particular sectors that will be applicable to them. Thank you.
Honorable Matsebe.
Thank you, Chairperson.
My question to department is that the final draft of this bill, or still going to go back to the department and the NCOP? Because I've got a serious challenge on the issue of this bill, on this Act of 13, whatever. Because when it comes to critical skills, really, I don't know who's supposed to take that. The two ministers, they have a procreative right to decide on behalf of the skills abroad or the director general. And mine also is question of second is question of consultation, which is very necessary, because we have a lot of people in our country with the skills and have been supplied, and just have to go back to do a consultation, working together with the DTI and the labor. Thank you.
Honorable Lovemore, Honorable Marcella, followed by Honorable Gum, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to clarify something. As far as I understand, the advocates can assist here, I'm sure. There are very, very different interpretations attached to after consultation with and in consultation with. Okay, so what you have got here is that the corporate permit or visa will be issued after consultation with, which means that you have to talk, as I understand it, and please clarify this for us, which means that you have to, in fact, talk to the departments, but you don't have to take anything they say into account. You can still make, as you call it, a unilateral decision. What you are proposing to take out is in consultation with, which means, in fact, that there has to be concurrence. It's a legal principle, if you want to call it that, that there must be concurrence. There is a very, very big difference between the two. So what you are taking out is, in fact, the far more binding form of consultation, that is in consultation with, and you're leaving the after consultation, which leaves the ultimate decision with the Department of Home Affairs, regardless of what the Department of Trade and Industry. In fact, it can be minimal consultation. It doesn't even have to be, there doesn't have to be any concurrence whatsoever. If that could be clarified, because I think that makes quite a big difference, Chair.
I'm covered.
Yeah, Chair, I'll refrain from responding to the Honourable Lovemore's explanation of the difference between terms in consultation and after consultation, but it is so that there doesn't have to be concurrence, obviously, in the case of after consultation, although the views should be taken into account of the other department. The fact is, and the thing that I do really do have a bit of a problem with here in this respect is that we have the department coming to our portfolio committee suggesting to us that we need to amend section 21 to take out after consultation with the departments of labor and trade and industry, and then to include in consultation with the prescribed departments. Then this same department goes on its own version to the NCOP committee and suggests a substantial amendment, substantive amendment to that committee, after leaving us, after the matter has been dealt with by the NA. And convincing the NCOP clearly to effect this substantive amendment. That is now the same department that suggested to us that this is the way we should amend the bill. And now they're back here today. And now they are placing, and that is quite a problem for me. They're in a sense placing this committee in a very difficult position now, because now if we don't agree, then we're going to have a conflict with the NCOP. It's going to be a political problem for us, and really that is completely problematic for me. we and the department should have a relationship where, you know, we talk to each other about these kinds of things, and we don't get in a position where, you know, we and the NCOP on something that is not, in my view, such a massive big issue necessarily, but on something substantive like this and a substantive amendment, that there's potential disagreement between us and the NCOP. And we need to go and, you know, explain that, and they need, they can even, I mean, if we disagree with this thing, there's going to be this, what do you call this, mediation committee thing. And, you know, that is really quite problematic. I don't think we should reintroduce new concepts here or new ideas here, Honorable Lovemore, you know, whether it should be after or in consultation, whatever. The matter for me is just that we took the view of the department. They came to this committee, they suggested something to us, and then they went to another, you know, another chamber, another house of this parliament, and suggested something else to them. And now we sit in this position, and that really for me is a underlying problem we are dealing with here. And it is not correct to say that yes, these numbers will be taken into account earlier in terms of the other provisions. There is no other provision that states that the number should be determined in consultation or after consultation, whatever the case may be. The only other provision is that the 1A that says no corporate visa may be issued or renewed in respect of any business undertaking which is listed as undesirable after consultation with the minister responsible for trade and industry. The other provision says a corporate visa may be issued by the director general to a corporate applicant to employ foreigners, blah, 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 blah. No consultation there. So it is not correct, with all due respect, to suggest that in terms of earlier provisions, I'm only looking at the bill, maybe there are other provisions, but it doesn't seem to me that there is an earlier provision that states corporate visas may only be issued after consultation or whatever the case may be, to suggest that at that stage the number and things like that would be determined. There's one specific provision dealing with the number, and that is the one that the department now seeks to amend, which is the one that says that this number of foreigners should be determined by the DG in consultation with the prescribed departments.
Advocate Erasmus, do you have maybe something to say? We do have our state law advisor here who may help us in this regard, that Honorable Gam, you are also a legal person. This is, I'm sure, a Section 75 bill. How do we handle it? Because it's a Section 75 bill. My understanding is that the committee, the National Assembly Committee, is the one that will decide whether they take along the amendments or they do not go along with the amendments from the NCOP, because it's a Section 75 bill. Could we get the state law advisor to help us here before we let the department?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Theo Achilles. I'm standing in for Mr. Mabizi Nunku, who's not here today. It is indeed a Section 75 bill, Chairperson. And may I just read the relevant section to the committee, just for clarity purposes. The council, that is the National Council, may pass the bill, or pass the bill subject to amendments proposed by it, which is in this case. The committee is dealing with amendments proposed by the committee. Then it says, if the council rejects the bill or passes it subject to amendments, the assembly must reconsider the bill, taking into account any amendment proposed by the council, and may pass the bill again, whether either with or without amendments, or decide not to proceed with the bill. So, and a bill that's passed by the assembly in terms of the aforesaid paragraph, which I just read now, must be then submitted to the president for assent. So the committee must decide whether the committee wants to adopt or reject the amendments as proposed by the NCOP. Thank you, Chair.
In that case,
We let us give the department time also to breathe, Advocate Rasmus or Sibylle Mitchell.
Thank you, Chairman and Honourable Members. Maybe just to little bit attempt to deal with the question that by the Honourable Member, Mr. Gum, in relation to why the changes. After each and every process, we go back to the bill and clarify and make sure that everything is in order and everything, all amendments are falling into place. So hence, there was an identification of the issues that were raised in the portfolio at the NCOP, just to make sure that everything is going to not have an interpretation problem. And that's why this area was also picked up, that there is an overemphasis. When we consult, an applicant would have made upfront whatever issues he would like to be taken care of when the visa is granted. So hence, there was that there is this amendment. So after each and every process, we go back to the bill and ensure that what we have as the law ultimately is not going to have any difficulties to implement thereafter. So, but I think that's why these amendments came into effect in the NCOP. And I think I'll allow Advocate Erasmus perhaps to, the in and after consultation, I think Mr. Gaum did indicate correctly that the in, it's where there is a consensus between the two parties consulting, but the after, they will consult. The consensus might be there, but then the one ultimately taking decision will then have to indicate the reasons why he or she did not take what was discussed and agreed. Obviously, there should be an explanation. But in this type of the issue on the emphasis on the number, we do not foresee an applicant saying, I need 20, if there was no justification in terms of the consultation immediately, and it's agreed we can't grant 20 but 15. Why would the department go and reduce it to 10? You know, there would be justification, but it usually wouldn't sort of crop up that the department go and suddenly reduce, whereas the applicant would also have said, this is the reason why I need so much number. And that would be justified against the paragraphs that I've read in terms of the skills that would require. And also in terms of the skills, the consultation is always there when we deal with critical skills, that as government, there will be consultations in terms of which skills are required. Hence, the issue of the list that we publish, that these are the specific areas where the skills will be required. So the consultation will indeed be there, and as we explained, there was just an overemphasis on the only the number that will be employed, but we don't foresee any issue about the reduction or addition of the particular number from what the applicant would have justified for that number. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, really, I think the it was not in no way designed to undermine the committee at all. It is really, as said by Advocate Sibylle Mitchell, when we went back and had a look at how we're going to implement it, we thought this was maybe just an overkill. Now, if the House really feels that it should go back, I don't think it should be a showstopper or seen as a showstopper, really, Honourable Chairperson. Because, like we said, consultations anyway do take place. The process is such that consultation does take place with the relevant departments on any corporate permit that is issued. In fact, we just had a meeting yesterday afternoon, late into the night, with the Department of Labor, Department of Higher Education and Training, the Department of Economic Development, to discuss exactly the issues and how we move forward with the implementation of the amendments in terms of our consultation. So those consultations are there. We have it regularly. We decide, they advise on who can be issued, they advise on how many can be issued, and we thought that is the process that takes place anyway. So please, Honourable Member, it was not in no way designed to undermine the work of this committee at all. Thank you.
Ma'am, Advocate T.F. mentioned it's a little bit major. I'm sorry, Papa, I can't. I do it vice versa. You mentioned that there's overemphasis. Are you referring to Section B? But in Section B, there's that after instead of in consultation. Will it be a problem if we really feel that this in consultation should remain in the bill, or we are overemphasizing what is said in the other section of the law? Like you're saying, Honorable Marcella?
Chairperson, I think you are providing leadership, and I'm happy we've got a chairperson like yourself. Because if we had some difficulties in a leader, then it would be a problem. And also your chief whip has provided guidance. So it's good to have legal fundies on our side as well, so that we can always comparatively deal with these issues. And it's what is good about this thing, once more, I'm happy, you know, it shows that elections have come and gone. We've got one committee. We've always wanted to work like brothers and sisters, colleagues, you know. And this is what is happening now. We're dealing with the law. So we all comfortable that what we did before elections, we were sober, and everybody can agree with that. So in that same breath and good spirit, we think that in terms of Section 75C, Roman numeric 1, we take what we have and we're going to endorse it in Parliament. That is how we should view this. And Mr. McKay, yes, in that good spirit, we'll continue working in a very good partnership with the department. And I think this really puts checks and balances so that we continue with our role as the committee. So, Chair, I move that we keep this bill as it is, with the amendments, obviously, of those, you know, technicalities. But this particular one shall remain. Thank you.
Hey, Honorable Marcella jumped the gun. On that note, Honorable Members, I think we are all in agreement that we are remaining with our original position. And our original position is that of in consultation with other departments. Because we are making laws here, Honorable Members. We don't want to make laws piecemeal. Today you are changing, tomorrow. And what, you know, in life, things do change. You'll find that one day we have a different Minister of Trade and Industry from another party, maybe another Home Affairs Minister, and they're so supposed to come together and consult one another, then there is no consultation, and that is not in the law, that the Home Affairs can make a decision without consulting the trade and industry. We want to make laws where people will always consult one another, whether they like one another or they don't like one another, whether they are angry with one another or they are not angry with one another. People must always work together and ensure that the country prospers. I'm sure on that note, it's my understanding that the committee agrees that we remain with our initial position of living in consultation in the bill. Am I right? And we have a mover. Honorable Marcella moved. Honorable Matebe seconded, headed by Honorable Maduna Peterson. Then we are going to our next amendment, which will be the Refugees Amendment Bill. Thank you. And Advocate Sibili Major, I'm not sure if I pronounced it right, but I've tried this time, will lead us. We are all ready.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I would, in the same manner that Advocate Erasmus explained, just go through the amendments as were made by the NCOP. We'll start with clause 4 that amends or appears on page 3, amending section 8. Sorry, let me check the clause. It's on page 3 in line 35. Yeah. So it's basically a new clause which will be amending 8C, which is in the Act. Yes. It's actually in the 2008 amendment. The amendment currently, the subsection 2 of 8C, which deals with the issues of the Refugee Appeals Board, which will be Appeals Authority, allows or provides that an appeal to be dealt with by the Refugee Appeals Board will be determined by the number of members that the chairperson would deem necessary. But then the amendment here, as it appears on subsection 2, is to allow that a single member will be able to decide on an appeal. So it will read as follows: an appeal contemplated in subsection 1A must be determined by a single member, which is the addition, such number of members of the Refugee Appeals Authority as the chairperson may deem necessary, provided that at least one of such members is legally qualified. So this is just to allow that a single member of the Refugee Appeals Authority will be able to decide on an appeal. I'm not certain if I can proceed. The next clause is in clause 6, which appears on page 4, starting with line 7, where it reads, after the word committee, the suggestion by the NCOP is to add "or any of its subcommittees." So it will read, when considering an application for asylum, the Status Determination Committee or any of its subcommittees. So this is to ensure that when establishing the Status Determination Committee, there may be subcommittees that will be established to deal with particular cases. For example, we have cases of manifestly unfounded, and so what the department or the committee will be set up in will have specific maybe subcommittees that will deal with manifestly unfounded, go through the process and be able to decide on the particular application. Then that will allow the much easier way of making sure that the applications are dealt with. So then also in page 4 in line 11 is the same kind of amendment where it will read that the Status Determination Committee will be added the word "or any of its subcommittees must at the completion of the hearing conducted in the prescribed manner." Then just to allow that where a decision or a hearing is conducted by a subcommittee, that hearing will be deemed to be that of the committee as a decision. Then, if I may proceed, honorable members, to clause 8. It will be on page 5 in line 4 where we are amending its subsection 2. It will read, the Refugee Appeals Authority may, after having determined an appeal, confirm, set aside, or substitute any decision taken by a Status Determination Committee. Then the insertion or suggestion will be, or any of its subcommittees, just to make sure that where a decision has been taken by a subcommittee,
then the Refugee Appeals Authority will be able to deal with it as an appeal. Then in the same clause 8, on page 5 still, from line on the list, it says 8. It should actually be line 9, 5, 6, 7. It's on page 5, it's from line. I think when we try to count here the lines, it should be 5, 6, 7. Yeah. So it runs over onto from 8 to 9. I think it will be correct to say from line 8. I think we'll just double check with the legal advisors. So it will read, the Refugee Appeals Authority must refer the matter back to the Status Determination Committee as it goes to the next line. Then the suggestion is to add or any of its subcommittees, just inconsistent with the other additions. So that will conclude the amendments that were suggested or proposed by the NCOP. Thank you.
Honourable Lovemore.
Thank you, Chair. I certainly shared the Honourable Gaum's concern about proposals by the Department being made to the NCOP, and I think exactly the same thing has happened here. I don't think it's the NCOP members who've made these changes, but certainly the Department who've proposed the changes to the NCOP. But I do feel a sense of discomfort with one single member assessing an appeal when this really is something that affects the life of not only the not only the applicant, but very often the family or extended family. I'm glad to see that at least there is a requirement that that person should be legally qualified. I'm assuming that, and maybe we can just hear the justification for it, because I'm assuming that it's done to make the process quicker, so that we don't have to get a committee together every time that one single member can do it. But I have a real sense of discomfort about that. Even more so, though, Chair, with respect to the status determination committees or any of the subcommittees. Subcommittees of status determination committees were never ever mentioned when we discussed this. Now, there's no requirement, there's no indication of number. It could be one. It could be one, which means we go back to exactly the same as a refugee status determination officer, and all of us are aware of the problems that we've had with one single person making very often very mistaken decisions. So this is very problematic. If we are going to put in subcommittees, for what reason are we going to have subcommittees of refugee status determination committees? And secondly, how are we going to ensure that the quality of decisions is improved to the extent that the rights of asylum seekers / refugees are not compromised? Thank you, Chair.
You shouldn't open it broad, Honourable Lovemore. I appeal that we confine ourselves to the amendments. Please confine ourselves to the amendments. Yes, I agree that we need to discuss the issue of an individual making a decision, though that individual is a legal person. It's okay, but we have so much corruption, so much abuse of power by some of our officials. We don't want to see again this department falling into that. And, Honorable Masela,
Chairperson, the reason why we are responding or engaging on this is that there are amendments before us. And I must say that I was shocked to see the one that talks about a single member on the appeals. We're told that there is a serious backlog of about 26,000. It was about a year ago. I don't know how much now. So you can imagine the pace that they move to try and deal with those. At times, they would simply look at their appeal and say, no, this one is not really important, and they deal with those. I'm not suggesting that the quality will be compromised, but many a times that is possible. So if there's one person sitting, are we going to make sure that whenever that person sits, it will be an individual that has got a legal qualification? So if that single person or a committee, you know, that is a bit of a challenge. You know, one was comfortable when we spoke about a committee and even the suggestion that says in each of our reception offices there shall be committees in those offices so that we ensure that we deal with this expeditiously. But a single member cannot be trusted, you know, wholly to be dealing with this as objective as possible. So I think that is a bit of a threat to dealing with the matter of refugees and political asylums, especially under the current situation. So we've got to think about the intentions, and I think the department can advise us on that. Because they came to us, again, referring to what Honorable Kam said earlier. They came to us, we agreed, we questioned some. It took a very lengthy process. I mean, we've dealt with so many laws since I've been in this committee. But I must say, we took so much of our time dealing with this, and we tried to workshop it as much as we could, where we were briefed inside the committee, and obviously, you know, fought and won, and some lost arguments in this process. But I think the other process the other matter that I want to relate to is the one of subcommittees. Why do we need subcommittees if we have a committee that we... Because the reason why we said we need committees, we said individuals, I think the briefing was that you've got those individuals sitting in these offices as SDOs. And each SDO is not really qualified to deal with this. Not all of them are qualified. Not all of them have gone through a rigorous training to ensure that they understand the issues. Now, having considered that and agreed as a committee, it was quite comforting to know that now there will be a committee that will be dealing with these issues. But now to have subcommittees, I think we're going to open up a can of worms, where anybody can serve and anybody can deal with this. And to assume that we are going to have many people, there's cost implications, and how much budget do we have to deal with this, with all due respect. And also the challenges around the actual implementation of this. I think the department is in a best position because they are here to really, you know, try and outline some of these components of the suggested amendments. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Marcella, Honourable Gump. But before you come in, Mr. McKay, the issue of status determination committee and the subcommittee. Let me come first to the status determination committee. How many people are we talking about there, as well as the status determination committee? How many? That is before this amendment, but how many people are we talking about?
Chairperson, in our, the regulations will state how many people there would be in a committee, but we are looking at a committee of about 8 or 10 people that would be on a committee. Now, I don't know, do I go into the rationale, or that if that's the question that,
yeah, thanks, Jane. Yes, once again, you know, it is a bit problematic that, you know, the department didn't come to us with these amendments in the first place. But be it as it may, I think that obviously the way that SUP 2 read in the first instance would have made it possible for the for an appeals an appeal to be heard by two people, for instance. So that's why the amendment now only makes provision for the fact that it can also be one person. But as it stood, when it said such number of members as the chairperson may deem necessary, obviously that could have been two as well. Now, I'm in a bit of two minds here, because I do understand that within the labor environment everywhere, members would know that appeals can cause a lot of delays, and it can really be quite problematic from that perspective. On the other hand, obviously, it is always better, I suppose, you know, that these matters are dealt with more than one person. But one should also take into account, perhaps, that this is an appeal, so this is not the initial decision, and if you then have a legally qualified person to take that final, you know, to take the matter or to deal with the matter on appeal, it is a bit different. We are dealing with appeals, and there is this requirement of a person that has to be legally qualified, as members would know. You know, many court cases and so on, and even appeals are sometimes dealt with by, you know, only one person, or also at other levels in the labor field or so on. So, you know, it's really a judgment call that we have to make here. It is an appeal that is a bit different to hearing the matter in the first instance and taking a decision as far as status is concerned on the first instance. On the other hand, you know, maybe members do want more than one person to hear it, and as it stands, two persons can indeed be appointed by the chairperson. Then secondly, as far as the other matter is concerned, I think that there, my only concern would be that I don't know whether there is something that specifically says that these subcommittees can be one-person subcommittees. If we don't have something like that, then we'll have to include that, because that was in the first instance why the department came to us and said we need a committee and not only one person. I don't have a problem with the idea of subcommittees. I think, from my perspective, speaking on my own behalf, but I don't think there is something that stipulates here that these subcommittees can't be one person subcommittees, and I think that this may be something we need to look into. Thanks, Jim.
Maybe the definition for a subcommittee?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, firstly, there are two issues here. One is a refugee appeals authority, and then one is a committee, and we are in agreement if we talk a committee, even if it has subcommittees, it cannot be a singular person forming a committee. These amendments, honorable members, came about out of discussion about implementation. It was not, again, it's not to undermine you. There's also a process at the level of the NCOP. And the question was asked, especially with the backlogs and stuff that we have now, how are you going to deal with all of those backlogs if you are going to have to sit as a committee at the appeals authority level? And sit and allow it an authority that is firstly centralized and dealing with offices that are decentralized, and the decision there honourable members, was that we actually have an appeals authority where an appeal can be heard, and Honourable Gaum is correct, it is not de novo hearings. It is an appeal. And if it is an appeal that one person can listen to that appeal for ease of for practical ease of work and to see that we are able to deal with the issues, with the numbers that we are having that's clogging, especially in the appeals level, the appeals process. And that the chairperson should be able to appoint such a person to listen to an appeal, or not to do the appeal. So that we are able to really practically implement and be able to deal with some of the practicalities that we have in terms of backlogs and just the demand, and the area of appeals is an area where we have massive backlogs, for instance. And if we don't take care of it in this way in the law, it would mean that an appeals authority would need to sit either at a central level or at the office level and be able to deal with it as three or four or five members. And we thought as well that the Act does make a provision, or the amendment does make provision that such a person needs to be legally qualified. And indeed, in other departments, there are appeals authorities where appeals are heard by a singular person, a person as well. That chairperson deals with the Refugee Appeals Authority. With regard to the appeals, to the Status Determination Committees, this was also a move away, honourable members, from having single or a determination done by a single person. And we said that we needed a committee to do that. But clearly, when later interrogated about how this single committee is going to do its work, again the question begged: practically, how are you going to implement this? Are you going to have at one office all cases coming to a single committee of 8-10 people for appeals to be heard, or can this appeals authority be broken up into smaller committees that would be able to deal with other cases as well, again for ease of for practical ease of work, so that we are able to work through the numbers, because where we have I thought I dealt with the appeals authority. I'm sorry if I mentioned, I'm talking about the Status Determination Committee now. I dealt with the appeals authority, I think, honourable members, and I explained the rationale behind that. I am now on the appeals. Sorry, the Status Determination Committee. My apologies. I'm confusing you. My apologies, honourable members. So this, this committee, again, we had thought that, or in the discussions, was that this committee should be able to have, if it is a committee of eight, then a committee of 2-3 could meet and deal with issues, 2-3 could deal with issues. But again, because it's a committee, it can never be a single person that deals with the status determination. That was the rationale into these amendments that were brought at the NCOP level, honourable members, honourable chair.
Yeah, I'm sure, Mr. McKay and the advocates, we want to actually assist you in doing your work so that the work becomes easier for the department. There are no blockages or backlogs in the department regarding the applicants, refugee applications and manifestly unfounded cases. All those things should be dealt with, speedily, without having to, have a quorum of so many people to look at this case. There is no quorum today, and then, all those kind of things. We are trying to make the work. the department easy. That is why we dig into this, because we don't want to come back again and deal with these issues. Honorable Lovemore.
Chair, yes, I agree with you 100%. Make the department's work easier, but also obviously protecting the rights of those whose rights must be protected. I do believe that the subcommittee idea actually has a lot of merit. It was never brought before us, but just one of the examples of an area where we've had a lot of problems is country knowledge, where RSGOs don't have up-to-date country knowledge. Now, if you have a subcommittee on, for instance, Zimbabweans, or a subcommittee on Ethiopians, or whatever, or even homophobia, which is another reason why people leave certain areas, there could be developed in those subcommittees a much greater knowledge than one individual could have of everything. So the subcommittee idea, I do believe, has some merit, as long as it is properly constituted. I'm not convinced, and I know this is a quick Google, but going into legal dictionary on Google and looking up committee, the definition of committee, it says an individual or group of people to whom authority has been delegated. It can be a single person, and in our view, it cannot be a single person. So even what I'm trying to say is, although I think, as I said, the idea of subcommittees certainly can have merit if they are utilized properly, but it can never be one person. And that must be stipulated in the law. It must be stipulated if we are going to put these subcommittees in. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Chairperson. You know, when you have to sit and make such laws, it's like trying to craft a constitution again, which is a very tedious process. And I wouldn't like us to assume that the understanding of some of the provisions of the Act would be applied, you know, rationally across the board. Some people, when they sit, they simply think that what they think is correct. So in that spirit, I would like to believe that some of these, because there are places where we said, no, the regulation will deal with this, no, the regulation will deal with this. I think the space of a subcommittee, the understanding was that you want to be able to have some of the dedicated groups that can sit down and be able to deal with specific matters arising from the application. But it's actually better if the department deal with this on, you know, and explain and deal with the detail on their regulation instead of trying to amend what we have. Because I'm a bit uncomfortable. I mean, I don't mind if the committee decides in favor of what is before us. It says that I've got a conflict in my mind. One says yes and the other one says no. I have to deal with that. It's my own mind. But you can't help me with it. But also, I think the general principle does make sense. It's just that I don't want to put it in a lot of detail, trying to say no subcommittees, yes. I think probably the wording could have been made much better to suit that principle to be practiced, whereby if a certain member, if the committee decides to have a specialized focus group to deal with these issues, you can. But a subcommittee is a committee itself. A subcommittee is not simply a group. There has to be some terms of reference to the subcommittees themselves. You can't simply have a subcommittee without any of those terms of reference. So you have to expatiate. It has got to expand on the mandate. Now, I think you're simply putting this, you're giving yourselves a cumbersome exercise now, because there's nothing that speaks to terms of reference of those committees, which if we have to accept the subcommittee, then we have to also have an insertion of the terms of reference, which determines that. It can't be the committee setting up a subcommittee and determine the terms of reference.
Otherwise, we are going to have a challenge in those small offices. Henceforth, I was saying that maybe the committee can break down on a decision depending on the focus group. It's a bit of a challenge, Chair. But the committee must try, and I mean, the department must assist us now in explaining the parties, how they intend to implement what is proposed before us. Otherwise, I do not have a major problem with this.
Honorable Gum?
I want to make a sort of a suggestion, but that's my own suggestion at the moment, Chair. You can overrule me, obviously, if you want. I want to suggest that I think it is fine that we go with this single member on appeal matter. If it doesn't work, and if then the department needs to come back to us on that matter. Let's go with that. It has to be a legally qualified person. Yes, there can be corruption, but there can be corruption anywhere. And it is on appeal. It is not the, you know, it is not someone doing the status determination, the initial status determination. So let's go with that. But on the second matter, I must really say that obviously it is correct that the subcommittee can be a one-person subcommittee. And the problem is then we are back exactly where we were. And the department came to us and said, we don't, we can't go on with these one single people, you know, doing these determinations. So I don't think it is really necessary for us to now state the terms of reference, things like that, of the subcommittee, because of subcommittees, because let's leave it to the committee. The committee is the one who can establish subcommittees. That is at least clear now from the legislation, and let the committee then also, you know, determine the terms of reference and so on. The authority is with the committee. Let's leave it there. But what we need to do is we need to have either in initially in the definitions clause, where the definition there in sub E is of a status determination committee, or otherwise in section 3 or clause 3 of the bill, where the role of the status determination committee is dealt with. We just need to have something there that says that this committee can also establish subcommittees, and these subcommittees must have at least two members or whatever you want to say. Then we deal with that matter. So leave it then to the committee to establish the terms of reference, so on. That follows. But we at least say very clearly that there is this authority, number one, and secondly, that the number of members should at least be two or three, whatever we decide now to say. That's what I would suggest. So leave, yes, give the department clause 4 as they've amended it with the one single member on appeal, but then as far as the other matter is concerned, the subcommittees, we need to say that it can be established by the status determination committee. Secondly, what the minimum number of members should be. That's it.
How is that, honorable members? Is that not helpful? I don't want to say what Honorable Gum has said, because maybe I'll say the wrong things now. The way he has put it, I think it's fine that we are in agreement that we go along the first clause, ne? The first amendment with seconded, but the second with the amendment, what, yeah, as to how Honorable Gum has stated. I think you should put that in writing, Honorable Gum, so that we follow you properly.
Maybe we can break 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And let's leave it to them to either come up with an amendment of the definitions clause, or otherwise then clause what was it, where you could have just come up with a real.
Okay, if I may, I would want to suggest, if we go that route, that you, in the definition clause, you link it also with your section 3, where it is established at the end of the day, if we've got that leeway to work around that. Thanks, Chair.
So write that down for us.
Honourable Marcella?
No, Chair.
Then
Let's talk about it now.
Yeah.
If we have 5 minutes, then I'm happy we can talk about it, because I've asked a question to the department. Now, before the question is responded to, Honorable Kam is responding for the department.
No, sorry.
Are you employed now by the department, sir? but I think it's a sensible suggestion. But if we have 5 minutes, then we'll talk about it now.
Can we have a 5 minute break? Are you saying? 5 minute break and give the department time to maybe work on something.